Welcome, Lucy Maria. How you doing?
Hi, Rachel. Good, thanks.
Good. Your topic, your research and your work is around how we archive online. Is your work a personal reflection of your position in the digital world, or are you questioning digital archive design?
I'm looking at the role of digital archive practice because it stems from my two main artistic interests, which are web design and photography. I feel with these subjects, I've always been interested in, well, firstly, I've really always been interested in the shifting digital landscape. I was making websites in the early web, and with that, you'd connect with others through web portals. There was no social media, that didn't exist.
Different world.
Yeah. And then I've always been interested in how we treat memory as well, and that's a massive topic in photography alone, which you're aware of because you're doing something
indeed.
Similar. So then I refocused on the shifts in the digital landscape, and by that I mean even between web one and web two, it's massively changed the way in which we connect and we share information. And even if we don't consider this as an archive, if we don't think we're archiving when we post things on the internet, that change in landscape is shifting the immediacy of access to personal and cultural history. We're constantly connected to anything that anybody posts. So I guess a main interest of what I'm interested in is how we choose to remember online and the online-offline representations of memory. I'm also really interested in how we use platforms almost as a form of musealization, you know, musealizing objects through social media photographs. I found out, like, when I was doing some reading, that there's this notion that we live as digital symbols and we're propping up cultural heritage. I thought that's pretty interesting. Instagram in particular seems to have really democratized the nature of remembrance. You know, people are eulogizing their breakfasts. Taking this further, I've been looking at how the different surface of the online and offline affects the nature of how we remember and how we access things, how we store things. And so that's where my series of printed tweets came in. And they are in my drawer downstairs. They began as a simple surface test for the online-offline behavior. I guess I'm really interested in that weird juxtaposition of written memory, and that's accessible to everybody, but then it's taken back into a more private and printed context, like a family photo album. But going back to the question, with regards to digital archive design, so far, aside from social media platforms, I've not really been analyzing digital archive platforms in depth, though I'm aware of, like, museum and archive interfaces generally not being too user-friendly. I had a friend in Glasgow that was also doing a similar project where he was trying to change the user interface of archive platforms.
So these are institutionalized.
Yeah, exactly. If you go on some of the really famous institutions, try and just look at what they have in their archive, it's generally just text and image. It's not super user friendly. But then, of course, there's that argument as well that digital can enhance experience in the space, but that's another argument for another day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Moving on to an interesting question now that I assume came from the symposium.
Yeah, it did.
Can we archive voice?
So I guess there's an obvious answer to this question, but in order for me to not just give you one sentence answer, I think the key is to maybe answer it a little bit more definitively. So we'd kind of have to ascertain what the archive is, but that's a really murky question.
And a big question.
Murky and massive question. Like, the internet's proved that our traditional notion of archiving is completely shifted. Particularly if we consider the everyday user as an archivist through the rise of the social media platform, which is what I focused on for my thesis. I know we were talking about that a lot at the time.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to focus on it in that sort of way, it can get quite bleak when you're trying to define new ideas and notions of the archive. And this also can also depend on even who is defining the archive. Like, I spoke with archivists who work predominantly with more traditional physical archives spaces, and also I spoke with professors who focus their work solely around the digital archive, and their views of archival practice are really different. Because there's people as well that so the more traditional archivist might think that a lot of people are thinking of the archive in terms of a concept, which I think I might be one of those people like that's kind of working with it along those lines at the moment. But I personally believe that new archival practice is expansive and fluid. So I think, yeah, pretty much anything can be archived, even if it's not with an intentional motive. But for a more direct answer for that question, I think there are many archives that focus solely around sound, obviously. I think we talked about it before, the British Library, what was it called? 140 Years of Recorded Sound.
Massive archiving program there. And that exhibition
was massive. So maybe instead what we need to think about, begin thinking about with archival sound is the ways in which these archives can be readdressed or forwarded in a new digital context, perhaps. But yeah, the reason why that question was asked at the symposium originally, obviously you know, but it's because I did that experiment with the computer voice, which is a pre-recorded computer voice, and it was representing, it was supposed to represent like an inner monologue, which is where my little BRB sign came in. And I tried to make the voice a bit more disarming and absurdist, so it came across more like an inner monologue, but I'm not sure if people thought that.
So that was very much part of your concept in the presentation.
Because I thought that could relate to the idea of archiving as well, the sorting and the making sense of information is me thinking and trying to go through my research process. And then I felt like that linking the voice to the series of images was also creating relationships, which I think somebody told me after. And making narratives, which is similar to archive practice as well. But then after I realised the whole thing could be a little divisive, and I began thinking, like, was this really a way of looking at the archive as an individual monologue or a way of archiving the inner monologue? The whole thing, I'm basically... Well, at that time, I was feeling quite confused, and I should have reflected on it, but I didn't.
Also a development of your perspective and your of where you're at as well, isn't it?
That
symposium was for everybody.
You've
previously talked about your project in which you're interested in archiving the error, which you presented to us in the symposium as well, through some of your images there. Why do you consider errors to be valuable and in including them in an archive?
So the errors project came at the very beginning of my interest in archive practice. I was doing an elective in archive practice up in Scotland, and we were going to all these archive spaces, physical archive spaces, and it was really, really fascinating. They almost seemed like totally removed from reality. And then I started thinking about how traditional archives often seem to celebrate items of cultural value and purpose. And I've told you about this 100 times, but there was a Francis McKee from the CCA, he's director of the CCA, he gave us an amazing talk about unusual archives, which I'm always banging on about. And he ascertained in his talk that there was basically a lot of value in even the smallest of items. So he was like, how can you archive a snowflake? And if you did, then, you know, think about it, like if you did archive a snowflake, then would it then tell you about the temperature and humidity of the world at that time? You know, so I felt at that time that maybe errors were pretty overlooked and ephemeral, and that maybe that was something that people weren't really archiving, which I thought was interesting. Like, is there not much to be learned from the error itself, and should failure not also be celebrated as much as scrutinized? And I was really interested in the different surface value too, and the idea of translating the error into the physical for exhibition.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Lucy.
Thank you.